the plea by doctors to get vaccinated, home prices and property taxes on the rise in South Florida, and how the Haitian diaspora are helping after the earthquake. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Hospitals are crowded, oxygen supplies are tight, and thousands of people are testing positive for COVID-19 each day. The pandemic continues raging through South Florida. Today on the program, we will hear from a new emergency room doctor on the front lines of the fight against the virus. And then homeowners, have you seen your property tax estimates? The hot housing market keeps pushing prices up and taxes too. Plus, the rush to help Haiti, how Haitians here are helping the country after another deadly disaster. It's all ahead on the South Florida Roundup, made possible by Willie the Bee Man, bee removal specialist. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening and supporting public radio. The COVID-19 virus keeps raging through South Florida. Tens of thousands of people test positive each week. Hundreds are hospitalized and dozens are dying every week, even though South Florida has some of the highest vaccination rates in the state. Today, on this Friday, we have learned that a judge in Leon County has ruled that Governor Ron DeSantis overstepped his authority by issuing an executive order banning mask mandates in public schools. The Circuit Court's Judge John Cooper agreed with a group of parents who sued the state over this executive order, claiming in a lawsuit that the governor's order was unconstitutional and cannot be enforced. The governor's order gave parents the sole right to decide if their child wears a mask at school. However, a number of school districts, including those in South Florida, instituted mask requirements for students, with the only exemption being students that were able to secure a doctor's order. Now, on Wednesday this week, more than 1,700 COVID patients were in Miami-Dade hospitals alone. Thousands more are in hospitals today in Broward and Palm Beach counties as well. Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava spoke with WLRN's Sundial program on Thursday.
The latest numbers, 15% positivity. 90% of those in the hospital are with no vaccination. We know that they are the ones getting extremely ill. The vaccine is the only thing that stops this thing. And the masking, of course, is vital because we can spread this variant even if we're vaccinated.
This week, the Food and Drug Administration granted full approval of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine, and the United States is expected to recommend booster shots of those vaccines, possibly in the weeks ahead. Schools, colleges, and universities are back in session throughout our region. More companies are requiring workers to get vaccinated, and tens of thousands of people are falling sick in South Florida each week. We want to talk about the vaccine, the COVID-19 experience, the Delta variant, your questions, your comments, your experiences, as we are live here on this Friday on the South Florida Roundup. 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Hit us up on social media. We're monitoring our channel there. Be sure to tag us. Our handle is at WLRN. Dr. Juhi Varshney is with us now, an emergency medicine resident at Jackson Health in Miami. Dr. Varshney, thanks for joining us here on the Roundup. Much appreciated.
Hi, y'all. Thanks so much for having me. I'm a new doctor. I just started my internship at Jackson Memorial in July.
You are less than 2 months into your residency in emergency medicine, and you're at Jackson. What was July like, and what is that experience like now?
It's true. When we first started in July, I even had a few shifts where we weren't seeing too many COVID patients. It started to pick up pretty quickly, I would say mid-July to the end of the month. And there was kind of a period of time where we were starting to see an uptick in cases in the emergency department, but it felt like the rest of the community hadn't quite noticed it yet. Mm-hmm. Now I think everyone's kind of on the same page, and we realize that we're all in a surge. But it was a little disorienting at first to see what I was seeing in the hospital not quite match up to the community.
Describe what your shifts have been like this week.
Yeah, this week, I mean, every shift is a little different in emergency medicine. We see patients struggle to breathe every shift. You know, there's a wide range of cases. We're seeing patients who are coming in able to walk around, normal oxygen levels that still feel pretty terrible, so bad that they came into the emergency department. We're seeing patients who are coming in with incredibly abnormal vital signs and very low oxygen levels, struggling to breathe. And then we also have a lot of COVID negative patients as well, people who are really sick with heart attacks or strokes or traumas, who are coming in and also need care and also need a bed.
Take us inside the ED, Dr. Varshney. Walk us through those hallways. Tell us what you're seeing during those residency shifts, what you're hearing, who you're speaking with, when what they're telling you.
Yeah. Gosh, the emergency department can be a little disorienting. There's a lot of sounds. There's a lot of beeping, a lot of monitors, a lot of phone calls, a lot of phones going off. There's a lot of conversations happening. But if you were to walk into the doors of the emergency department, you would see patients kind of lined up in hallway beds. You would see that all of the beds that have, all the rooms that have beds are full. You can kind of pop your head into a room. There's like a glass window that you can see the patients and you can see the monitor. You can see what their heart rate is and what their oxygen levels are at. We'll just like walk by the rooms and kind of watch from the window, especially for COVID patients, because we don't want to open the door if we don't have to. So I will walk down the hall, eyeball my patient, see how they're breathing. I think a lot of COVID patients can change very quickly. We have people coming in who are able to talk to us, who are able to carry a normal conversation, who honestly seem pretty okay. They can decompensate pretty quickly over shift and need to get intubated at the end of the shift or even in a few hours, just because the virus is that bad.
What are some of those experiences that you are having so quickly in your emergency medicine residency at Jackson Health that perhaps as you were leading up to starting this residency in July, mentors or others were perhaps telling you, you know, these experiences would be happening in the next several months or perhaps the next few years, but yet here you are practicing, learning emergency medicine at one of the busiest EDs in the state, if not in the nation, amidst a pandemic and a raging virus.
Yeah, I don't think anyone could quite predict that it was going to look this way. I think a lot of us expected to start our residency in calmer waters. I think it really did feel for a little bit of time over the summer that we were turning a corner, that we were maybe going to get through this and step back into some semblance of normal. So I think a lot of us started our intern year hopeful that things would settle down a little bit. I've gotten more procedures than I expected to. I've certainly gotten more intubations than I think most people have 2 months into residency, which is so sad. You know, on one hand, it's an interesting procedure. It's something I want to get really comfortable with and be really good at, but it's hard to get to know patients and then see them decompensate so badly that they need to get intubated.
Decompensate meaning that their oxygen levels are dangerously low.
Exactly. There's a lot that goes into it. We watch their oxygen levels. We watch their breathing rate. If they're breathing really, really fast, that's not something that you can sustain. And it's something that you're going to tire out of. We watch them to kind of see what they look like. There's different things, you know, you can just look really bad if your muscles are starting to tire out. Sometimes when people don't get enough oxygen to their brain, they can start to get a little confused. So these are all things that I'm learning to pay attention to. I've got some really amazing senior residents who have been in the pandemic this whole time. A lot of really amazing attendings who've been here the whole time, who've been teaching me so much so that we can all give our patients the best care that they need.
Dr. Juhi Varshney is with us, emergency medicine resident at Jackson Health. She started that residency on July 1st. She wrote about her experiences in a column published on the opinion pages of our news partner, the Miami Herald. Dr. Varshney, what are COVID patients and their families telling you about their illnesses?
It's also different. There are so many stories out there. I think a common theme that I've seen is that we'll get a patient come in and be critically ill. And then, you know, no one can really come in with you. It's so sad. People are coming in by themselves because visitors, it's just too dangerous to have visitors in the hospital right now. So we'll call patients' families. Sometimes we're not able to get a hold of them. And then sometimes, oftentimes, if we are, it turns out that everyone else at home is sick. So we've got a patient who's critically ill in our emergency department, and then a lot of their loved ones are also sick with COVID.
And so what do you tell them? What do you tell those family members who may not be at the hospital, or the patients who may be on the cusp of having to be intubated to save their lives?
I mean, at that point, if they're getting so close to needing intubation, I just focus on providing comfort and support, making sure they know that they're safe and that they're going to get taken care of. When I talk to families, I am honest about how bad things are. I also, you know, encourage families, you know, to go get tested, to isolate if they've been spending time with this patient. And then I encourage the vaccine, of course. It's one of the best tools that we have. An ounce of prevention is worth more than a pound of cure. So I remember actually feeling quite helpless earlier this month, just wishing that I could talk to people about getting vaccinated before things got too bad. Because by the time they come into the emergency department, it's oftentimes too late. And it's just so nice to be here today to get to talk to people about the vaccine, because I really do think that's the best thing that we can do.
You wrote in the Miami Herald, quote, "I tell them," these being the family members and others and patients, "I tell them that getting vaccinated is an act of love, showing how deeply you care about the health of the people around you." How has that message been received?
You know, it's actually been received well in my experience. I think there's a lot of different reasons people don't get vaccinated. A lot of the patients that I see at Jackson are people who maybe English isn't their first language, who maybe aren't insured, who maybe aren't documented, people who aren't super well plugged into the healthcare system and maybe don't have a primary care doctor. So for a lot of people, it's not that they're anti-vaccine, it's just that they're a little hesitant and haven't really talked to anyone about it. So I often have a lot of success with my conversations. I, you know, just create a space where people can ask questions, and I'm very honest about the risks. I think some people have minimized the risks of going unvaccinated. I think people might think that they've been okay, you know, for the last 18 months. Why do I need to get vaccinated now? Hmm. But the Delta variant is worse. It's more transmissible. I think people are getting sicker from it. And I think that once I tell people kind of what I've been seeing in the emergency department and how sick my patients have been, I think it's given people a little more encouragement to get vaccinated.
Dr. Varshney, we want to remind folks that they could find a link to the column, the experiences that you wrote about in the Miami Herald with our news partner. We just tweeted out that link. You can find it on our Twitter handle, at WLRN. And you can read about Dr. Varshney's experiences in her first 6-7 weeks during her emergency medicine residency at Jackson Health. Doctor, you, I suspect, began your ambitions to be in medicine well before a global pandemic, right?
It's true. The pandemic came around at the beginning of my fourth year, so yeah. I had already committed to path.
So how has the pandemic affected your medical aspirations?
You know, I think for me, it's just been a reminder to take everything one day at a time. I think people in medicine can be very focused on kind of being in control and knowing what direction the future is going to head. And I think for me, the pandemic has just been a reminder that we don't really know what's in store. All we can do is kind of focus on the day that we have right now. It definitely encouraged me to keep an open heart, to continue trying to meet people where they're at. I'm still very much an optimist, and I believe in the human spirit, and I believe in our ability to come together and get through this. I do.
And that has meant for you meeting those COVID-19 positive patients in the emergency department there at Jackson, many of them unvaccinated. Are you experiencing breakthrough cases at all?
We are, unfortunately. Dr. Michelle Au, who is an anesthesiologist and state senator in Georgia, where I'm from, described, she likes to say spillover infections instead of breakthrough, because breakthrough kind of implies that there was a wall that didn't hold, but spillover says that there was a wall, but maybe it just wasn't tall enough. So I think with the spillover infections, we are seeing them, especially in patients who don't have great immune systems. It's so sad to see like a patient who's on chemotherapy or a patient who's had a transplant and on powerful immunosuppressants. You know, these patients try to do everything right. They've gotten their vaccine. Everyone at home's gotten their vaccine, but sometimes they still come in with a spillover infection. So we do see it, but that being said, for people with normal immune systems who maybe get a spillover infection, having the vaccine is the difference between getting to go home and recover in the peace of your own home with normal oxygen levels, a normal looking x-ray, versus people who were unvaccinated getting that same Delta variant infection. They're going to be much sicker and probably come into the hospital.
Dr. Varshney, our final moments here, wondering how you protect yourself literally and how you prepare yourself to enter into the ED for a shift that you have come to expect given the pandemic.
Yeah, every shift in the emergency department is so different. It's so hard to predict what it's going to be like walking in. So I definitely just try to keep an open heart and an open mind. I have like a really wonderful community of co-residents. I have like the best classmates and people in my program. So I often talk to them during shift or after shift. We debrief, we discuss these cases. It's something that helps me kind of release the weight at the end of the day. Writing has also helped me process and grieve. And then meditation is also something that helps me stay grounded. But I think everyone's been coping differently. And I think that this really has taken a toll on a lot of healthcare workers, especially those who've been around since the beginning of the pandemic.
Dr. Varshney, we can't thank you enough for spending a little bit of your precious free time with us today here on WLRN. Thanks for sharing your experiences with us.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you all for listening.
Best of luck with the rest of the residency. Dr. Juhi Varshney, an emergency medicine resident at Jackson Health. You can read her essay about her experiences the first 7 or 8 weeks of that residency at our news partner, the Miami Herald. We just tweeted out a link to that column on our Twitter thread, at WLRN is our handle. Stick with us. Lots more ahead here on the South Florida Roundup. We're going to be talking about the hot housing market and subsequently rising property taxes. That's next as the Roundup continues. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening to public media and supporting public radio. It's not just the temperature that's been rising here in South Florida. Real estate continues to be red hot. The influx of people and businesses moving to the region coincides with a low supply of homes and workspaces, all creating demand, driving up prices for homes, rentals, even office spaces. Low borrowing costs to buy a home have helped too. So have you felt the housing market heat this summer? Have you taken advantage of it as a seller? Have you been burned by it as a buyer? Have you been priced out of purchasing a home? Have you been priced out of trying to rent a condominium, an apartment, or a home? Have you been able to rent that property for a lot more than it was listed for if you're a landlord? Share that experience with us now here as we're live on this Friday afternoon on WLRN. Phone number 800-743-WLRN. Toll free 800-743-9576. You could also share your experiences with us on social media. Find us at WLRN on Twitter. We'll get to your calls, tweets, and more comments and conversation coming up. County property appraisers have started mailing out tax notices to property owners this week. We spoke with Miami-Dade County property appraiser Pedro J. Garcia. Property Appraiser Garcia, welcome to WLRN. How has the pandemic affected home property values that your office looked at in Miami-Dade County?
Well, so far, we don't see any problems with the values of the property. We have a tremendous amount of people buying properties and buying at a regular asking price. And it's a big surprise. Since 2020, that we were expecting that the sales going to be a slowdown, but there was a tremendous amount of sales in 2020. And 2021 is amazing. Values that we've seen on properties, and especially in water properties, waterfront properties, is really to look around.
The worst fears about the impact that the pandemic may have on the housing market in South Florida did not come to fruition. In fact, quite the opposite. Low interest rates, warm weather, no income tax in Florida, all of that has been attracting a lot of attention. The total estimated taxable value of all property in the county up by over 4%. That includes residential and commercial. What types of properties have been driving that?
Everyone. I was even checking, and that was my concern in 2020. Office buildings that I expect that they're going to be a problem for the owners to rent those space. And what happened is most of the people are trained now to work from home, but appears that the rent on the rental office buildings are getting higher too, because we're getting a lot of new companies coming in and taking over on those space renting. And even if they leave the people working from home, they need the space to be at the office. So what they're doing is they renting, and we see an increase in rental values in Miami-Dade County.
Hmm. So offices have been moving in value. Certainly residential property has been moving higher in value. Warehouses have been hot in South Florida for a good number of years. What about retail? What about other places in the property market? Are they all seeing the kind of price appreciation and appraised appreciation?
We see the situation, for example, in some of the shopping centers, that they have a little bit of problems, and some of the stores, they've been empty for quite a while. They don't receive any rental. So we don't see that much increase on those shopping centers. We have places like, for example, Dayland, that they have an empty space like Nordstrom, and that's a big space.
Let's talk about this from the perspective of the homeowner in Miami-Dade County, those folks that own property and are living in that property as their primary residence. What's the average homeowner experiencing with the property tax estimates that they've been receiving over the past few days?
This year, the increase of the people that have homestead, we have around 450,000 families with homestead exemption. Those people will see only an increase of 1.4% of the taxable value. So there will be a minimum amount of increase. Appears that the millage provided to us from most of the cities, and including the county, is going to be the same millage they used last year. So that I don't see any increase on those. The increase for the properties, they are not protected with homestead. We're talking about commercial property, investment properties. They will have a maximum increase of up to 10%. But that depends if the market provides a way to prove that that property increased 10%.
The homestead exemption is allowed for people who live in their homes, not for second homes or investment properties. And the millage rates that you speak about from local governments, those are the taxable rates, essentially. And if those millage rates stay the same, but the property value goes up, property taxes, of course, will be going up as well.
Definitely will be go up, but then not a tremendous amount of money for the people that have the homestead exemption, because the increase was only 1.4%. So that was really minimum.
Let me ask about one taxing agency on the property tax estimates that your office sends out. Schools in Miami-Dade County. In past years, Florida state lawmakers did not allow school districts to capture higher property values, even if the school district tax rate remained the same, by limiting local school property tax rates. That's not the case this year. What's the impact on the school portion of that tax estimate?
Well, that's going to be big for them, because we have a lot of properties. They're going to be the taxable value that is not protected for the homestead people on the second homestead will be at the market value. So the increase for them will be a very big amount of money coming into the school board.
Miami-Dade County has the highest proportion of non-primary residence housing units, investment units. Some affordable housing advocates have said that inventory could help address housing affordability and the lack of housing supply if those second homes were rented. And there's been some conversation in some cities and other areas of the country to incentivize that with a vacancy tax, a higher tax rate for second, third, fourth homes or investment properties that do not have renters. What do you think about a higher tax on vacant second or third homes investment properties?
I'm not happy with that idea. Really, we need to protect the owners of all the properties, including the people that are renting. And it is important that we keep the taxes as fair as possible to the owners of the property.
Pedro, given the overall price appreciation, the hot housing market in South Florida, do you anticipate property tax appeals to be successful this year if folks open up those property tax estimates and want to complain about the price that you and your office put on their property?
Well, the people can provide it to us, the information, and we will discuss it with them. I believe we've been working very fair on the numbers. We were looking at comparable sales. We don't looking for the highest numbers on sales. We are not looking for the lowest numbers on sales. We're looking for the average numbers on sales to use as a comparable, like we normally do here.
Pedro, you've been appraising property values in Miami-Dade County for four decades. Are we in a bubble?
No, we are not. No, we are not.
That was Miami-Dade County property appraiser Pedro J. Garcia. We're talking about home prices, property values, property taxes. Those property tax estimates have been mailed out. You probably got one if you're a homeowner or you own an investment property here in South Florida. Let us know what that letter states here on the South Florida Roundup. 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576, or at WLRN on Twitter. The Broward County property appraiser, Marty Kerr, joins us now. Property appraiser Kerr, welcome back to WLRN. Nice to have you.
Oh, thank you so much, Tom, and thank you for having me on, and thank you for the great work that you and WLRN do keeping your listeners informed. I think y'all are awesome.
Well, always appreciated. As a property appraiser this time of year, property appraiser Kerr, you're probably looking for all the public support you can probably imagine, right? Do you agree, first of all, with your Miami-Dade colleague that we're not in a housing bubble?
Well, you know, I think Pedro does a great job in Miami-Dade. He's a great friend of mine, and he works very, very hard. And I would tend to agree with him. I don't think there is a bubble. But the one thing about real estate is you just never know. It's very uncertain. Things change year to year, but good things are in place. You know, the last time we had a bubble burst, you had very lax rules when it came to giving mortgages. There really wasn't a lot of regulation. Now all of that is in place, and our South Florida real estate market is very, very hot. I mean, people are coming from all over the country, New York, California, anywhere where there's an income tax. They're coming here and making Florida their home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you never know. You can't see the future, but I don't think it's going to slow down anytime soon.
How much is the total estimated taxable value of property in Broward County up?
So to give you an idea, in 2020, the taxable value was about $209.5 billion. As of this year it's $221.87 billion. That's a 5.88% increase. And to put that in perspective, the Broward County Commission is keeping its millage rate the same. Mm-hmm. And so if they do that, that means they're probably going to get another $67 million of revenue this year than last year. That kind of shows you the increase in value when it comes to properties for this year.
Yeah, it's slightly higher than what the property appraiser in Miami-Dade County said was the estimated total taxable value property increase, about just over 4% in Miami-Dade County, about 5% in Broward County. For homeowners in Broward County, what does that mean for those tax estimates that they're opening up and taking a look at now?
So the great thing, and I'm so glad you brought up the tax estimates. So just for all the listeners out there, every single Broward County property owner received in the mail their trim notice, their truth and millage notice. I always tell everybody it's not a tax bill, but it's a document so you can make sure that when your November tax bill comes out, that you're not overly paying in your taxes. And what that shows is it shows the value of your property for tax purposes, all the exemptions you're currently getting, the tax rates your local governments are thinking about setting, and the dates and time that they're going to be discussing those. And I always tell everybody, if you have any concern with the market or assessed value of your property, and or if you're not getting every tax saving exemption you're entitled to, call me by September 20th or email me, come on into the office, or we'll come to you and we'll make sure your property value is correct and apply all those exemptions. Now, to answer your question, it's such a good question. There are right about 400,000 homesteaded property owners in Broward County. That's the residential portion, the biggest portion of the residential market in Broward County. And under Florida law, if you're a homesteaded property owner, every single year, the value that you're taxed on is capped at either 3% or the consumer price index. This year, it's at 1.4%. So that basically means if you're a homesteaded property owner, which is the majority of properties in Broward County that are residential, your value that you're taxed on won't go up more than 1.4%.
And the is it hitting that cap?
Yes, it's hitting the one. So every single year, the Department of Revenue provides us the consumer price index. And this year it's 1.4%. So the value that homesteaded property owners are taxed on, if their values increase, it can't increase more than 1.4%.
Marty, appreciate that. The Broward County property appraiser, Marty Kerr, with us here on the South Florida Roundup. Lydia Dinkova is with us as well, covering residential real estate and all things real estate, for that matter, for The Real Deal. Lydia, welcome to WLRN. Nice to have you.
Hi, Tom. Nice to be here.
We were talking about residential real estate, and the property appraisers talking about homestead exemptions. That means primary residents, people who live in that property. But in terms of investment properties, that means renters. You recently reported that residential rent in some areas of South Florida are seeing double-digit increases, 24% in some cases. What's driving that kind of demand, market acceptance, I suppose, of these kind of higher rents?
Well, it's really a confluence of factors. There's a lot of things at play. One of them being that the housing market is just unattainable for, I would say, even the majority of people. The median house value went up to $500,000 this summer. That's one thing at play. But the bigger issue really is just the demand. There's just so many people who want and need to rent, and it's coming from two places. One of them being locals. A lot of them are back to work. They feel comfortable renting on their own now. Probably they've weathered the pandemic lockdown and the economic impacts of that with family or friends, but now they're back on the market for an apartment. But really the bigger issue is from out-of-staters. A lot of New Yorkers, a lot of West Coasters are coming here. They're also looking for a place to rent. So it's just, there's more demand than anyone has ever seen. Brokers, landlords, developers are all saying that this is really unprecedented. And some of them have been practicing here since the 80s.
You've got deep sources in residential real estate and brokers, Lydia. Let me ask you just your thoughts. Thursday night, the United States Supreme Court threw out the latest eviction moratorium that was issued by the Centers for Disease Control. The majority of the court on a 6-3 vote said the CDC overstepped its bounds with this eviction moratorium. What should we be watching for in the weeks or months ahead as this eviction moratorium runs out here in South Florida?
Yeah, so my initial thoughts on that are I could just expect that there's going to be a deluge of people out there who are looking for rentals, and they're just going to be priced out of the market, because when they rented the apartments they're currently in, they rented them at rates that are significantly lower than the asking rents right now. It takes a little bit of time to evict someone to go through the court process, so it might take a little bit, but over time, I think that it's just going to exacerbate the situation of the demand.
Lydia, appreciate you sharing the reporting here with us. Lydia Dinkova, covering real estate for The Real Deal. Some of your phone calls here as we're talking about home prices and property taxes in South Florida, 305-995-1800, 800-743-WLRN. Fabio in Hialeah has an issue to try to tackle. Fabio, thanks for listening and calling. Go ahead.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. Yes, I am shocked. You know, I received the tax bill, and last year I paid $2,600, mm-hmm. and the new one came from $3,700. So I have a home exemption. I live in my house in Hialeah, and Mr. Garcia just said something about 1.4%, and I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
yeah, you're looking at what, about a 30% increase there,
yes,
in what,
yes,
what you opened up when you're with your property tax
yes,
estimate. So the homestead exemption is applied, Fabio?
Yes.
Okay.
I spoke with them yesterday,
yep,
and they say that this is because the prices have increased so much that that's why I'm getting this increase. So I applied for a new homestead exemption, which is for seniors. But even
right,
then, they're going to lower some. I mean, they might, but I don't understand why, you know, all of a
yeah,
sudden it went 30%.
Marty Kerr, I know you're in Broward County, not in,
yes,
and I know Hialeah is in Dade County, so we've got our geography straight there. But just as you hear the story from Fabio, there may be others in your jurisdiction that are seeing property tax increases well above that cost of living, that 1.4% cap that you mentioned earlier. What, how to look at that? What to do?
Well, so the, and that, and I heard what Fabio had to say, and I really appreciate him calling in. And I know if he calls again to the Miami-Dade property appraiser, they can probably explain it to him a little more. But it, under Florida law, if you're an existing homesteaded property, so if you've been, this isn't your first year owning the property, but if you have a homestead exemption, then at least the value you're taxed on can't go up more than 1.4%. Now, if there was a 30% increase and that was the case, then his increase in value could be a number of things. Maybe the city that he lives in and the county, maybe they're increasing the tax rates, or maybe there are special assessments. Like, for example, Fort Lauderdale last year put a special assessment for stormwater,
right,
on their tax bill. So those could be other factors as well.
Yeah.
But he should definitely review the trim notice, because that'll really explain to him what the difference is.
Yeah, good point, Marty. You bring up the millage rate, right? If the tax rate,
yes,
may have changed, that's going to certainly affect the overall amount that any homeowner pays, even if the value has increased as well, but perhaps not by 30%. Fabio, I hope that helps with your question there in Hialeah. Rebecca San Juan is with us as well. Let me welcome in Rebecca, real estate reporter for our news partner, the Miami Herald. Rebecca, you've been listening in as we're focusing here on residential real estate. It, you know, 16, 17 months ago, there were big concerns about a huge depression in office space because of so many people sent home early on in the pandemic. What does the office real estate market look like here in South Florida now?
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I will tell you, it's a different market. It is very hot. We're seeing the reason why we're seeing the average price per square foot, the asking rents rising, is because we're continuing to see this influx of companies across the country moving and opening or expanding their headquarters or moving entirely their whole team to South Florida. And believe it or not, although rents have risen for the office market by about 5.8%, and we have the sixth highest average asking rent in the country compared to 50 other metro areas, It's still a deal because where are we seeing a lot of movement from, right? San Francisco and Manhattan.
Yeah.
Here, the average the average asking rent per square foot is about $43. In San Francisco, it's about $69. And in Manhattan, it's even higher.
Hmm.
It's about $84 per square foot. So it's still a deal.
Real estate is relative when you take a look at those different locations, right, Rebecca? Another call here, Thomas in Hollywood. Go ahead, Thomas. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. The reason for my call, everybody mentions all the reasons for the increased cost. And nobody's talking about how vacation rentals, Airbnb, VRBO, has greatly stolen properties that were once available for renters. And in some countries, what they do, if you have a vacation rental, they do this in Berlin, they do it in Paris, there's an extra tax put on these type of properties to help affordable housing.
Yeah.
And I'll just listen from there.
No, Thomas, I'm glad you brought that up. I asked Pedro Garcia, the property appraiser in Miami-Dade County, about that so-called vacancy tax. Marty Kerr in Broward County is the property appraiser. What do you think about an additional kind of surcharge on short-term vacation rentals, which could otherwise be used for 12-month apartment leases?
Well, at least for my purpose, I wouldn't support an increase in taxes on anybody. But what happens when it comes to Airbnb and rentals, things of that nature, what I always tell people, if you're a homesteaded property owner and you rent your property, you're really going to be in danger of losing your homestead exemption. And that can actually increase your value significantly that you pay taxes on. And it's a lot more money in taxes. So I always tell everybody, if there is somebody that is renting their property, please call us, let us know so we can adjust your value. If not, we're probably going to find out anyways, and we're going to increase as you pay your fair share.
Lydia Dinkova, let me ask you, with the real deal, how about Thomas's point about Airbnb short-term rentals taking otherwise apartments out of that normal 12-month lease market?
Yeah, that's certainly a factor. The truth is that right now, even for the people who can't afford the rents, there's just not enough units to go around. I've spoken with people who are searching for 4 months now, and they've only been able to see one place in Doral. And when she got there, the line was 25 people long. Oh. Certainly, I know I've never heard of that before in Miami-Dade, but certainly Airbnb and short-term rentals are playing a role, and they're taking away some of those units. And that's just compounded, like I said, by the unprecedented demand. Yeah.
Rebecca, let me ask you about in the office space, you know, pre-pandemic co-working spaces, WeWork and the like were all the rage. How have those affected kind of this current supply of office here in South Florida?
That's a great question. They are still doing very well because a lot of smaller teams, either they can't afford the average asking rent per square foot, or they're looking for deals, or they're seeing that. Look at now with the Delta variant. This was this came as a total surprise for many people, and they're looking at the co-working market or model and having memberships there. So a lot of local firms are looking at having co-working spaces. Funny enough, though, I will tell you, some of them that are more established, some small firms that they say, we have a space in a co-working local office space, but we want more space because we're growing, because we are seeing firms growing and expanding.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking that, they're taking their membership and they're finding better deals, believe it or not. We reported on VAC Coffee. If you love Panther Coffee, they help sweeten their coffee naturally. So you might be familiar with them. And so they had, believe it or not, a 9x9 cubicle in Wynwood.
Yeah.
They paid $13 per square foot, and they found an entire office space just for them, for their growing team, in Country Walk near Kendall, mm-hmm. and they're paying the same price per square foot.
Yeah.
So it's
much
shifting
larger
market,
space.
But
indeed.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Rebecca San Juan, real estate reporter with our news partner, the Miami Herald. Lydia Dinkova, real estate reporter with The Real Deal, and the Broward County property appraiser, Marty Kerr. Thanks to all three of you for joining us here today on the South Florida Rondo. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Have a great day.
We will indeed. Stay close. We still have a little bit more to talk about here on this edition of the Roundup, how the Haitian diaspora in South Florida is hoping to help after the deadly earthquake earlier this month. That's next. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. It's been nearly 2 weeks since a 7.2 earthquake struck Haiti, killing more than 2,200 people, displacing hundreds of thousands of more. The United States government immediately deployed search and rescue teams, relief teams, medical supplies, and other items to the country. So what's next as Haiti continues to recover from this disaster? What role does the United States play? And how to avoid past mistakes when providing aid to the country that is so close to many of us here in South Florida? Cozy Joseph is along with us now, the president and founder of Gascoff Clerge Foundation. Cozy, thanks for joining us here on the South Florida Roundup. Nice to have you.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. It's really an honor for me to be here with you today.
You have family in the city of Lakai affected by this earthquake. How are they doing 2 weeks on?
2 weeks on, they're holding on. Actually, my elderly dad is in Lakai, but, you know, thank God our homes were not impacted. But our families, you know, the trauma is really still there. It's running pretty deep.
Last week, you helped collect medical supplies to send to Haiti. How goes those collections? What's your message to the community here 2 weeks on?
Well, the collections are on their way to Haiti right now, and it went really well. We've loaded one truck full and sent them to a shipping company, and we are still accumulating more, and planning to send them off this week. I will tell you that those medical supplies, they were very welcome. As you can imagine, people are still being treated for wound care and other and different types of trauma.
Tell us about the communications, if any, that you've had with the United States International Aid Agency or other non-governmental organizations that are operating in this area of Haiti. Have they been communicative to you as a leader in the diaspora here in South Florida?
No, not really. But I'm pretty sure that there are other organizations. I don't know if they are communicating with other organizations in the diaspora, but I am on a group. I am on a group, on a Haitian diaspora group, and I understand that yesterday there was a meeting as the Southern Command, where they were talking to some Haitian leaders. I was not a part of that meeting, primarily because it happened in Miami and I'm in Palm Beach.
Right.
But I am in very tight connection with other Haitian organizations that are really doing the best that they can with the little funding that they have to deliver direct impact to the victims in Haiti.
What would you like to say about the diaspora role in providing relief to Haiti? There's been a lot of analysis, certainly in the last 11 years, about the relief efforts and recovery efforts launched in light of the 2010 devastating earthquake, and where many of those efforts did not produce the kinds of results that donors and others had been hoping for.
I believe the diaspora will play a critical role in the long-term recovery of that region in Haiti and of Haiti, period. What I'm seeing this time around is a whole lot more organization among the different diaspora organizations. They're trying not to duplicate the mistakes that happened in 2010. They're trying not to duplicate efforts across the organizations, and they have some financial means to deliver direct impact. What I would encourage the larger NGOs and the governmental organizations to do is to really have that conversation with the different diaspora, you know, with the diaspora, the Haitian diaspora, to really understand where they fit in and how they can be leveraged, right, to deliver the relief and to deliver to help the country recover. When you take an organization like my organization, for example, the Gaskell of Clergy Foundation, I will tell you that there is no other NGO that will know my region better than I do, that will understand the culture better than I do, that will understand how to touch these folks better than I do. Because at the end of the day, when I look at the victims, right, that are in some of the tent cities, well, not tent cities, that are in some of the, that are homeless, there could have been me. I mean, some of them are my childhood friends. So I understand the lay of the land, and I have the desire. So I have the aptitude and the competence to help. And I really think that organizations such as the Gaskell Clergy Foundation should have a seat at the table when all the conversations about funding and recovery, are on the table.
Yeah. Such important words to say and to hear, Cozy, and I appreciate you giving us the opportunity to talk with you today. Thanks.
Oh, it was a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
And our best to your extended family and your friends in Lakai and elsewhere on the island.
Thank you. I really appreciate the kind words. Thank you.
Cozy Joseph, our guest, president and founder of Gaskov Clergy Foundation in Palm Beach County. That is the South Florida Roundup this week. It is produced by Andrea Perdomo. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Lance Dixon is our digital editor. Our news director here at WLRN is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. The director of radio operations and the program's technical supervisor is Peter J. Mertz. Richard Ives answers the phones. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling, listening, and supporting public radio. The South Florida Roundup is made possible by Willie the Bee Man, bee removal specialist.
WLRN Public Media.